Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakevillebooks.com. Robin Hood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Hi, this is Sarah calling from Kent Memorial Library.
Hi, Sarah. This is Courtney from the Millbrook Library.
It's nice to talk to you. So it looks like today we're talking about a Connecticut issue, but I think it's bigger than that. But we can talk about it at a national level too. So in this past summer, Connecticut passed some laws about. They say it's about banned books, but what it's really about, I think, is about the way that patrons and people can complain and or remove items that they think are offensive from libraries. So what do you know about this? And I'll go from there.
I don't know much about the new Connecticut law, I have to say.
Okay.
So I think start with, 101.
Yeah, all right. So basically, at the beginning of the fiscal year, which was, I guess, July 1st, this new law came into the state, and it affected all of the libraries. I'm not sure, actually, as much if it went to, academic and school libraries so much, but I think it may have. So what we were told to do as as the public library in a town, is that we had to change our policies to reflect this new law. And the policies have to say the procedures and the criteria for removing an item, for complaining, for asking for a display to be changed, for collection development in general. So all of these things now had to have very specific and individualized policies that set the criteria and the methodology of how a patron or a resident would get something offensive removed. And so, it seems sort of straightforward. It's very specific exactly what they have to do. And so we had to rewrite our policies. And, all libraries have these policies already, some sort of collection development policy, collection management policy. I'm sure you do too. But these were really specific, this is the order of operations, and this is all the work that the complainer has to do, that the petitioner has to do. And my understanding of it is that it's to protect libraries from scurrilous complaints, from somebody who just randomly walks into a library and says, I want you to get rid of these materials, or I find your, Pride Month thing offensive, blah, blah, blah. They have to do all sorts of things. And then after that, even if they do all the things that they have to do, which, for example, if it's a book, they would have to read the whole book. They would have to explain exactly what parts of it are offensive. And then it goes to the library director, and the library director has the opportunity to say yes or no. They can read the complaint and still disagree with it and say, no, I'm sorry, this book still has literary merit, and we are going to keep it in the collection. And in addition, the book has to stay in the collection until that time. So just because someone comes in, the book stays on the shelf until a decision's made to remove it. And then there's an appeals process where they can then take it to the board if they want to, the board of directors. And same thing, the board of directors has the opportunity to study all of the information that the person's presenting and then make a decision. Again, the material stays visible and exactly where it was until unless they decide to actually remove it. So it's just creating lots of hoops so that if somebody really wants something removed or taken down, they can't just walk in. It also has to be someone who lives here. You can't go into, I can't as a Kent resident go into the library in Litchfield and say, I want you to remove these books. Only people in Litchfield can complain about Litchfield, and only people in Kent can complain about Kent. So that was what we had to do, and we had to create these policies, circulate them amongst our board. They had to approve them. Then we have to prove to the state that we've done that with minutes from meetings and all that kind of stuff. So that's where we are. And the hope is to head off complaints before they happen by making, you know, the procedure is there. It is doable, but it's not simple, and it takes a lot of work for someone to really push something like that through. So that's what I understand that these changes are for the state of Connecticut. Do you know, what does New York have anything like this, or does Millbrook itself have something like this?
So Millbrook itself doesn't have like a law or anything like that. We do have a collection development policy where if somebody wants us to reconsider a book in the collection, we have a request for reconsideration form, and it's very similar. The person has to be a resident of our service area. We ask that they read the book and like point out specific things that they don't agree with or have a problem with or want reconsidered.
Yeah.
And so we do have a policy in place for sure, as I think, like, I would hope most libraries do at this point. And I believe there is a bill called the Open Shelves Act that I think is in Assembly Committee right now.
Oh, wow.
And this bill, it's not as in-depth as I think as the Connecticut one is, but it basically says that it ensures that library staff are able to develop collection services and programming that reflect the values and protections established under the Human Rights Law and the Equal Rights Amendment to the state constitution.
Okay.
So I think that's like the closest thing that we have right now.
And that's in committee, like that. It's going to, at some point, it may be brought forward.
I believe so, yeah. I'm on the website right now, and it says it is in Assembly Committee. So I know it's not been enacted.
Well, I mean, everything I know about how laws are enacted, I learned from Schoolhouse Rock. So when it's in committee, that's
honestly,
good.
But too.
But it doesn't mean anything's going to happen.
Right.
Neat. Well, that's good. You know, we've had very few challenges over the last couple of years. We had one that was really kind of funny when I look back at it now. We had a woman who came in, and she was reading. She'd read a Flannery O'Connor book, you know, a set of short stories, and they're written, you know, early 20th century stuff. And she said, "There's some language in here that I found that I thought was really offensive, and I think you should not just have this sitting on the shelf. I think you should consider taking it out. It's just not right for this day and age." And I said, "Well." And literally, it was just that. It was just a conversation. And I was like, oh, okay, well, thank you. I'll talk about it with my my circulation staff, and we'll get back to you. So I literally had it sitting on my desk for probably 2 months, because I was like, how do I – it's Flannery O'Connor. Like, you can't – like it's like Twain. Like, you can't mess around with these people that are part of the American – you know, the American storybook, right, the iconic. So – I looked at it, finally talked to my supervision, my CERC supervisor, and she read it too, and she's like, you know, it's Flannery O'Connor, it's of the time. She's not, like, hurling epithets at people. And you know, it was the use of the N-word in the South in the early 20th century. And she's, you know, Flannery O'Connor was talking about her life and what she had experienced. She wasn't glorifying it. She wasn't necessarily sprinkling it around like it wasn't meaningful. It was just, you know, hard to read these words now. And so I thought about it, and I finally wrote to her, and I said, look, you know, we're going to keep it. It's Flannery O'Connor. We think it's important. It's an important record of what life was like in the United States at this time, and thank you very much for your concern. And she said, what? She'd completely forgotten, because, like, she hadn't gone to all that effort. She had just sort of came in one day, and she sort of gave me this book, and she was like, this was a problem, but didn't make any sort of official complaint that she had thought through and really put a lot of time and energy into. And so I had just stressed out for, no joke, months over something that she completely forgot. She was like, oh, of course, it's Flannery O'Connor. And I was like, oh, gosh. So... In that, just that story for me illustrates why those steps are important. Like, it was not meaningful to her, meaningful enough. She forgot almost immediately that she had made this comment to me and this complaint, but I had worked it into, like, this existential crisis about early 20th century literature, and it just was unnecessary. So in that way, I like the structure. I think it's great to have... But yeah, this was an interesting turnaround, because of course it was the other end, right? A lot of the book challenges now are coming from the other side of this sort of social divide where we're finding ourselves, you know, anti-gay or anti-immigrant or whatever. And this was sort of the opposite. This was someone saying, like, this is offending my oh-so-liberal sensibilities. How about you? Have you had any challenges?
We have not had any official challenges. We have had concerns brought up about books in our children's section,
mm-hmm.
But we have our policy, and the board went through a process where they listened during public comment and then put out a statement. And one of the books was miscataloged, so we did put that right in the right spot.
Okay.
But overall, I like what your kind of story really highlighted about like the importance of having conversations with people.
Right.
And I think like that is really, really critical when it comes to topics like this, because often people are upset. They don't like generally come in wanting to talk about a book they don't like happy.
Right.
But I think those conversations can be really important in explaining why the book is in the collection, catching mistakes if they happen, because
mm-hmm.
we are
oh,
all
they do.
Human,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah, and I think that like that to me is really, really the key. Like if we can like talk about this and come to a mutual understanding or work on a solution together before it even gets to like the official policy process, to me that's like best case scenario.
Right.
And I also really like what the Connecticut law does in stipulating that people who want to bring up concerns have to live in the service area, because I think the American Library Association put out in their data collection and study of book bans and stuff like that, they found that 72% of demands to censor books in schools and public libraries actually come from like pressure groups and government entities.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And many a times this cannot even be people that are actually like paying taxes to your library.
Right.
So I think that's like a very important part of the law and in our policy as well.
Yeah, I feel like even though it was certainly a challenge to rewrite all of these, I mean, they were like, each policy is like 6 pages, rewrite all these things and go through the whole process with the board, I do feel like it was intended to protect us, that there's steps and they're there to keep us safe and to really give us the professional responsibility that we should have as you know, the directors and you know, actual librarians. People studied this. It's not random. And not that libraries don't occasionally have their own agendas, but sometimes they reflect their community in a way that, you know, communities are diverse. And that's important that every person can, I believe, that every person can find themselves represented in a collection that is supposed to represent a community, a town, or a service area.
Yeah, I know so many librarians that put so much thought and effort into collection development and are very, very aware of, like, their own personal biases and,
right.
like, trying so hard to not build a collection that just reflects that. So, like, that's something that I'm very personally aware of, and I'm like, I want to make sure that everybody in our community can see themselves represented, even if it's something that I'm not interested in or
right.
I might not personally agree with, but I want anybody who walks in our door to be able to find a book that works for them.
Yeah, but I mean, that's why we have professional journals, and that's why we have reviewing agencies and all these things that help, because it's important to get past your own biases. There are plenty of books that I do not want to read, and sometimes I look at them on the shelf and I go, but if they're well-written and well-received and they have an important message to speak, message to say and such, then of course, you know, everyone's opinions, if indeed, unless it's true falsehood, but that's what the reviews are for. You know, we can't read every book. There's no way. You know,
oh, I wish we could.
But, I don't. I have a really limited repertoire. But yeah, I just think that you know, we have to be able to rely on professional services to help us understand what's in the books before we buy them, and yeah, reflecting our whole community is very important.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. What have you been reading lately that you liked?
Oh, what have I been? I've been on, like, a scary book kick lately. So I actually just finished Stephen King's Salem's Lot for
Ooh.
The first time. I've read that for the first time. That was very scary.
But yeah, I bet.
This time of year. And then I just read The Halloween Tree by Ray Bradbury, which has been on my list like forever, and I finally got to read that. And it's like a kid's chapter book, but it was very good.
Oh, that's kind of fun. I'm in the middle of this fairly awful but incredibly popular it's like a Viking romantasy, as they're called these days. I can't even remember the name. It's terrible, but I'm enjoying it. And then I just read one that I really loved. It came out last year, and it's called Sandwich. And it's a story. Have you read this one? It came out in 2024, and it's the story of a family that goes on a Cape vacation. And it spoke to me because the main character, the narrator, really was of my age. So, you know, adult children and aging and deteriorating parents, full of nostalgia. You know, when you look at these fabulous adults that you've created, that you can just literally see their baby faces right there as they're getting engaged in front of you. Like, it's that sort of juxtaposition of, you know, what it was like to raise a family. And they go to the same house every year, right? And then she's also in the middle of menopause. You know, I hear that, sister. And it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. And I sent it to all my friends. And I said, everybody must read it.
All right, that's good to know, because I think I have that on my list.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I mean, it's you need some tissues, but it's really, really great.
That's okay. That's how you know it's a good book sometimes.
Agreed. I love to cry. I'm good at it. Okay, well, I think that's probably all we have. We're still waiting on our building project. I'm hoping one of these days you and I will have a conversation about all of that, or at least the status of it. Right now we're kind of in limbo, waiting to go to bid, but hoping any day.
Do we have 2 hours to talk
about? Seriously. Oh, my gosh, like up to 2 weeks. More like it. Yeah, it's been an odyssey, but we'll get there one of these days.
It'll be worth it when it's done.
That's what they tell me. Okay, it was nice to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut. Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakefieldbooks.com.